We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
This is In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots podcast. It's all Pelicans, all the time. And welcome to a special, maybe the word is special, a different podcast of In the Know. This time I am joined by yet another member of the Bourbon Street Shots family, Shamit Dua. You probably know him from Reddit if you follow the Pelicans there at all. Shamit, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Just trying to keep up with some of this Kings game that's going on right now. But I'm doing well, Marina. How about yourself?
I am doing terribly. And that gets right to the point of this particular podcast. Usually we do our podcast every Sunday night, sometimes Monday nights. This one, I decided I wanted to grab somebody and just do a podcast after that rock awful Lakers game last night. And you know, first thing I got to say is every team loses to bad teams. So it's not the fact that they lost to the Lakers, because the Lakers are a bad team. But you know, if you just look around the league, like, the one team, Golden State, or I guess they've lost two games now, but they lost to Milwaukee, which has been terrible. The San Antonio Spurs have lost to the Pelicans, who are terrible. So, like, really good teams lose to pretty bad teams. So it's not the fact that it was the Lakers that set me off. But I wanted to talk just about what we're seeing with this team and how I don't think any of it actually matches or works or plays well together. So you ready to get started on this? Basically, I don't know, maybe this is the anti-Gentry cast in some ways. I've been kind of slow to jump on Gentry and blame him, but I think I'm starting to get there. Have you been there? Are you there already? Are you not quite there? Like, what is your, if you had to give Gentry a grade today, what would that grade be?
If I had to give him a grade today, I'd give him a C minus to D plus.
Okay. You're more generous than I am, but okay.
I'm not completely on the wagon of this is all Gentry's fault. I think a lot of it does have to do with him trying to push this new system onto these players. But again, I wonder what his system will be like if we did have better players and everything is just so messed up. Right. It's so hard to draw any type of conclusions.
Okay. Well, the first thing I want to just address, just in general, is small ball. Okay. The league loves small ball. Everybody talks small ball. When I had all those podcasts with Mike about whether we should bring back Omar Asik and Ajinsa, it's like, well, Anthony Davis can play center. This league is going small. It's not actually really going that way, not completely across the board. But last night in the fourth quarter, there was a stretch of, I believe it was 6 minutes, might have been 5 minutes. I think Gordon left somewhere around minute like 5:40, where the Pelicans ran with Ryan Anderson at center, Alonzo G at power forward, Norris Cole, Drew, and Tyreek playing wing guard, whatever you want to call them, the perimeter.
Yeah.
And the Lakers countered with Julius Randle, Larry Nance, Lou Williams, then Jordan Clarkson, and Anthony Brown. So the idea of small ball, and tell me if this is why I think people use small ball, and maybe I'm missing something entirely, but there's two particular reasons why you go small. And one is you have a lot of really good, talented offensive wing players or small players who are better than any of the big men you have on your team, significantly better. So having that additional weapon on the floor, on the perimeter, makes the team spread out its own defense even more, and therefore you get open driving lanes, you get to the basket more freely, you get open shots more freely. That's one thing, one reason why you would go small. The second one is the other team has a big who is a stretch shooter kind of player, like Dirk Nowitzki, or someone along those lines, where you have to have someone who is capable of tracking them on the perimeter, and your own bigs are too slow to do it.
Right.
So a lot of times you go in and you'll grab one of your bigger wings and say, track that big guy out in the perimeter. He's not really a threat in the post, but he is a shooter. So the way they counter Ryan Anderson. Those are the two primary reasons you would go small. Can you think of any others, or do you think that about nails it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that about nails it. You, like you said, you want to have your best sort of talent out there, and a lot of times that's your guards, that's your wings, that's your smaller players. And then, you know, that naturally spaces out the floor for you, or, you know, you want to counter what the opponent's doing. So, like, either they're dictating to you or you're dictating to them. So that's two main reasons, yeah.
Okay. So Julius Randle, so let's dispatch the second reason why we would have gone small first up. Julius Randle, Brandon Bass, and Larry Nance were the guys who basically played the fourth quarter as bigs for the Lakers. Does any of those guys strike fear into your heart on the perimeter?
Nope.
No.
Nope.
None of these guys are shooters.
I think Randle maybe made like 5 jump shots in all his college career or something like that.
right.
And Nance, he can dunk really well. That's about it.
Yeah.
Nope.
Yeah, Bass has an okay mid-range that he uncorks every once in a while.
Yeah.
But it's mid-range. It's not even like deep mid-range. It's like a 16-footer.
Yeah.
So none of these guys are people you need to chase out to the perimeter. So I don't know. That was clearly not the reason why this team was going slow. It was not to counter some, you know, amazing, you know, Ryan Kelly shooter or something. Like, they actually had some guys who could have gone in there and done something.
Right.
That was the case.
Nope.
So the other possibility is our team, like, we want to go out there and have a quick offensive attack and play our perimeter dudes. So why in the world is Alonzo G the guy you put in at power forward? That is, like, the most unbelievably strange decision. It's like, can you come up with any reason why Gentry would say, I need to put Alonzo G out there?
I think if you look at Alonzo G's shot chart, you can confuse it with that of a traditional power forward.
So,
like, mostly dunks and putbacks and things of that nature.
So he just thought he was a power forward.
I think that's the only thing I can come up with.
And, you know, I could even see possibly you put G in there because you think he's a good good at guarding one of their hot perimeter guy. Like,
right.
Lou Williams wasn't hot in that game until the very end when he got to the free throw line, but...
I mean, yeah, their guards were, like, a collective... I don't know the exact number, but it was awful. Like, the entire Lakers team, I think they shot 38% as a team and won the game. 37% as a team and yeah. won. I don't think... Yeah, like, was he afraid of someone going off? Like, and then that is that why? I don't understand. I mean, D'Angelo Russell, like... He was making some plays out of the pick and roll, but I mean, he's not a quick dude. He's not anyone that I'd specifically want Alonzo guarding. Like, I trust Drew or Tyreek, and I mean, I wouldn't trust Gordon on him. But still, like, I don't know, man.
Yeah, and so like the even more inexplicable moment, like he brings G in, but he has him guarding Larry Nance, so. It wasn't like he brought him in to even guard a perimeter player. So he actually looked at his bench, and he looked at all his guys, and he said, my best option right now to defend Larry Nance and score against this Lakers team is Alonzo G.
Maybe he thought Larry couldn't guard Alonzo on the other end. I mean...
What is there to guard?
I have no idea. Alonzo did have a couple nice dunks, in that little sense, but that I don't know.
Yeah. And then here's the other piece I just want to bring up. And this is actually, and I have this article half written. I got to get it out there because I think people need to see the numbers. This is the most disappointing thing. And you said this just now, like you would trust, you know, Drew Holiday to guard him, D'Angelo Russell, who by the way, wasn't even in the crunch time because Byron Scott doesn't think that the one guard who had a good shooting percentage and was running the pick and roll properly should be on the court.
Yeah, that's,
at crunch
that's
time.
Preposterous. We don't want that.
It's like we'll go with Jordan Clarkson, who's 5 of 17, and Lou Williams, who's 4 of 14. You know,
but I mean, they did win, so I don't know. Maybe there's something to it.
Probably. Byron Scott. You know,
He is.
He's a former coach of the year. Yeah. And he was that in New Orleans.
And in Brooklyn. I mean, not in Brooklyn. New Jersey, I believe.
Oh, he was, wasn't he? I forgot about
Jason
that.
Kidd.
Yeah. He's had some pretty good point guards in his career.
Yeah.
But so the thing that I wanted to mention was Kobe Bryant had two easy baskets in that game. Did you notice who was guarding him on those two easy baskets?
I'm going to guess Eric Gordon.
No.
No.
Drew Holiday.
Huh.
And this is something that when I was looking at the stats, and, defensive statistics are not the easiest things to pin down because defense is a team thing and all that, but you can look at things like RPM, which tries to isolate a player and how well the team plays defensively when they're on the court, over a couple years and get a good idea of how good they are. Mm-hmm. You could take a look at how well players at the same position perform when they're on the court. You can take a look at – they have all that NBA tracking data now where they can say if a guy is defending someone and they're within a few feet of them when they take the shot, that person gets credit for defending. And you bundle all of that information together about Drew Holiday this year and last year, and he ranks as an abysmal defender. But just in general, players get to the rim on him at a higher rate than they do typically. They finish at a higher rate at the rim than they do typically. And when Kobe came on the court, Drew was so into it. Is he too mentally, I need to show how awesome I am in this situation? He got right up on Kobe Bryant, who, why? Like, are you scared of a Kobe Bryant three-pointer at any point in his career, much less right now? Like, Kobe's never been a good three-point shooter. Like, there's moments where he's had streaks, but he's never been good.
Yeah, but he has the record, bro.
He does. And so Kobe, he gets right up on Kobe, and Kobe takes like one step and Drew's on his hip and doesn't bother him the rest of the way to the rim on either of the plays. And it's Kobe Bryant again. The guy is probably slower than Ryan Anderson at this point. How can you not get back in front of him? And if you just watch Drew in these games, just do that for consistently. If you're, we can't do Sacramento because that game's going right now. But the next game that they play, just watch him when he comes on the court, and see how either he cheats off way too much when he's on the weak side, or why he stays right up on a guy when he gets blown by way too easily. And sometimes he jumps the route, but it's more often that he just gets beaten. And so here is the general issue I have with this team. Alvin Gentry has Drew Holiday in there for defensive purposes. I don't think anyone would disagree with that, right?
Right.
He has Norris Cole in there for defensive purposes, right?
Right.
And he has Alonzo G in there for defensive purposes. Of those players, G is the only one who actually rates well defensively, and he is a little bit above average. A little bit. Drew Holiday is almost negative 2 points per game defensively. And in the world of RPM and how well people play defensively, the worst guys in the league are usually minus four, and there'll be three of them.
Minus two is replacement level.
Yes.
So yeah. So there essentially there's. It's saying that you could take someone off the streets, not really off the streets, but any old replacement and put them in for Drew, and you'd be about the same on the defensive end.
On the defensive end, and so Drew does have some offensive bonuses. Like he ends up being pretty much flat because his offense is good enough that it counters his defense. But then Eric Gordon is actually worse. And he's not in there for defensive purposes, but he's worse. But he's actually got the same sort of offensive thing going for him. But then here's the last one. Norris Cole was out there for that last section. Norris Cole rates as the third worst player in the NBA who qualifies.
Defensively,
third worst. And offensively, he's the worst guard, period. And the sixth worst in the entire league, which makes him the fourth worst NBA player, period. And the other guys are rookies.
Oh. I looked at some of the RPM stats. I never bothered to look at some of our deeper bench guys. Because, it's always all right, how's AD doing? How's Oshik doing? Oshik is surprisingly a positive overall this season.
He is.
And he
turned it around in December.
Yeah, he's been playing well. I mean, he's only playing about 16 minutes a game, but he's been doing well in that time. And his defense is really carrying his numbers. But that's bad. That's really bad for Norris Cole. And he was. I think there was an article last year when we traded for him originally, I think 538 came out with an article, and they did the whole predicting wins off of their RPM models. And in the article, they mentioned Norris Cole, I quote, RPM disaster, Norris Cole.
So we all know Norris Cole has not played that well this year. He played better last year. He's not played that well this year. People are still upset that we gave up Ish Smith and are playing Norris Cole, which by the way, I should say this. I did look because I have a soft spot in my heart for Ish Smith too. I actually enjoyed watching him play basketball.
I did too.
He is better than Norris Cole offensively and defensively. He is not better than Drew Holiday in either of those things.
No.
So
yeah.
Drew Holiday is an improvement, which I told you, Drew Holiday is not doing very well defensively. So that gives you an idea of how bad Ish Smith is defensively. So this is essentially, if you just look at RPM, the lineup that he rolled out there defensively had a major negative in Norris Cole, a major negative in Drew Holiday, a major negative in Ryan Anderson, who, by the way, is the third worst big in the entire NBA defensively.
He was on page 11 of 11 on ESPN's RPM, defensive RPM stat.
Yes, I think he ranked 434 or something like that. Which, in the greater scheme of things, if you think about the way basketball works, big men have a larger proportion of impact defensively because everybody funnels towards them.
Yeah.
So the fact that Ryan Anderson is that low, it's not only that he's that low, it's he's that low, but he's playing the big man position where you're supposed to just naturally get some defense, and he doesn't.
And the best part is ESPN's version of it has some funky height priors included in the formula where they kind of like are biased towards some of the taller people. And so you'd figure he'd get at least some boost because, you know, he's 6'10 and taller than the 6'6 guys that we're putting out there. But
yeah. Oh. Yeah, and if you take a look at when he's defending players, like all the different types of plays, like if he's defending a roll man or he's defending a post-up, the only thing he's even average at is post-up, and everything else, he is in the 11th percentile or lower in the league. So we're talking about three guys who are major defensive liabilities. Alonzo G, who is slightly better than average, and he has Tyreke Evans, who, and this is going to shock everybody, Tyreke Evans is better than Alonzo G defensively, according to these ratings, because he is an ISO monster. If somebody isolates Tyreke, he shuts them down.
Yeah, I don't...
He's strong.
Yeah, really, I mean, he's big. He's just a big dude.
So we're basically running out of lineup that is a major negative, and then we're compounding it by having Cole and G, who are no positive offense at all. How can you possibly be sitting there thinking that this is the best possible lineup? Like, Eric Gordon is a major negative defensively, but at least he gives you a big positive thing. So he should have been out there over Cole. Omer Asik and Ajinsa are both positive defensively, and Asik is way more positive defensively. He at least can make sure they don't get any offensive rebounds. So one of those two guys, even if Asik, you're so worried about the fact he can't dunk, Ajinsa is still a perfectly viable thing. I don't understand how Gentry could have possibly come up with that as the closing five.
And you know what's crazy? Like, there were times last year when we were all injured. Like, AD was out, and Ryan was out, and Monty would sometimes put in Ajinsa and Asik together for like 1 or 2 minute spans to really clog the lanes and just make sure no one's getting in the paint. And it would sometimes work. Like, you'd figure even that's a better strategy than what we did. Like, go super big instead of...
Right. Quite honestly, I would rather see Tony Douglas than Norris Cole out there.
that's
point where I am with Norris Cole.
Yeah, Norris has not been fun to watch.
And you know how many minutes he got last night?
He had, like, more than Drew, right?
He got 32 minutes. Jeez. Yeah, Drew got 26.
Oh, man.
So he got more minutes than anybody except for Tyreke Evans and Ryan Anderson.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. If I was Dell Demps, I probably would have been on the phone with you know, my cap experts and my lawyers saying, hey, is there any wiggle room with the Salvin Gentry contract? it's so bad. I don't understand.
There's a guy, have you heard of Harlebov on Twitter?
Yes.
So he, you know, he is notorious for sort of like ranting about like dumb coaches and decision making, like, and all that. Last year he used to harp on Monty a lot, and this year, early on in the season, he was really getting on Gentry's case. And initially, like, I was like kind of like upset. I was like, man, like, I don't agree with what you're saying. But one of the tweets he had was, it doesn't matter, because I was like, well, we're all hurt. But one of the tweets he has said that it doesn't matter who the Pelicans have on their team. Somehow Gentry will find the wrong combination of five players to put on the floor. And at the time when he tweeted that, I was like, that's absurd. You're just saying that. We don't even have the players. But like now, like, it's been how many games? We've had 37 games, something like that, and I think I see what he's talking about.
Yeah.
I don't understand some of the lineup decisions at all.
So the only other thing I wanted to talk to you about, and part of it's because Quincy Pondexter's not coming back this year, which is a bummer for everybody who loved to watch Quincy last year. But this team, as constructed right now, say everybody is healthy, and Anthony Davis is available, and Anthony Davis unlocks a lot of things.
Yeah.
Do you really feel that this team, with its best players, is capable of small ball? And if so, what is the fragility there? Like the finishing five, Davis, Anderson, Gordon, Tyreek Evans, and Drew Holiday, although probably Norris Cole will be in there for some reason.
And Alonzo.
And Alonzo, right. We'll find a way to take Davis out and put Alonzo in there. So and that finishing five, do you still feel like if Gentry decided to play those guys together a lot more, that is a valid small ball group that will be able to play very well together and probably win games for us?
I mean, if you look at it very technically, like, they were a positive last year, and they were a positive the year before. Am I right?
Yeah, and actually, it wasn't a huge positive, but they were, like, +4.
Yeah.
Something over the course of the game.
And they gave up an absurd number of points per 100 possessions. I think it's like 120 was their defensive rating or something like that. But you know,
but they scored an absurd rate too.
Right. So, I mean, theoretically, it works. But is it sustainable? I don't know. I mean, for whatever reason, Gentry's been sort of hesitant to play the finishing five together, even when they have been healthy. So, I know there was like that small stretch of like the 10 minutes they had played together, they were posting like an absurd like +50 net rating or whatever. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, that's 10 minutes. Like, I don't know what you can conclude from 10 minutes.
Nothing.
No.
Really nothing. And I think that group is now up to, like, 24 minutes played together the entire season.
Which is tiny.
Which, right, and they have been available together for, I think it was 15 games now at this point, or 17 games.
Yeah.
So basically, you're averaging 2 minutes a game of them together? Not even 2 minutes. That's really
and
good.
It's
2 minutes.
Not even like, you know, your last 2 minutes. It's sort of spaced out 30 seconds here, 30 seconds there. Wait, I got to put Alonzo G back in. Like,
so it feels like that lineup is available.
Yeah.
If you take Davis out of it, or you just take one of the wing players out of it, does it feel at all like this team has somebody who can slot into those spots, even if you take Ryan Anderson out of it, you take one person out of that group, do you feel like you can still play small ball with anybody else on this team? Or would you rather just do a traditional lineup and throw a Sheik and a Jensa in there?
I think you could still play small ball. Some of the numbers, I think, you know, if you put in Dante Cunningham and use him like he was used last year, not this new version of Cunningham that's, like, spotting up in the corner, but, like, you know, having him curl off some screens and, like, finding him open, like, 15, 20-foot jumpers, like, in the elbow area that he's comfortable hitting. Like, people say mid-range shots aren't great shots, but, like, he makes those shots, right? Shot's better than a missed shot.
Yep.
And you know, in terms of confidence, in terms of momentum, and everything. And you look at some of the numbers of Davis and Cunningham together last year, like, they were pretty good. And I think, you know, you sacrifice some of the spacing that you had with Ryan and some of the offensive firepower, sure. But I think they have enough firepower as it is, and Dante could really slip in there and provide them some of the defense that they've been lacking from Ryan.
Yeah, or anybody.
Right, but again, it depends on how you use him. If you want Cunningham to just sort of be a decoy on the three-point line, no one's going to guard him out there. Like, you might as well just not have him out there. But if you put him in a position where he is a threat, then, like, okay, well, suddenly things change.
Right. So, last thing, and I think I just said last thing the moment before, but I had one more thing that I came up with.
Uh-huh.
So, and I gotta get every dig in there. I can't. I guess, like, last night, I watched a game, and I was actually really tired. I'd had a kind of a long day. And I was sitting there watching it, and it was a late game. I'm on the East Coast, so it started late, and it was finishing up. And I was just kind of sat there, and I watched the game, and I didn't really feel all that angry from the game. Like, I kind of almost felt like it's coming. They're going to lose this game all game long. And I don't usually feel like that. I was just kind of like, and when it happened, I was just kind of like, yeah, I knew it. And I went upstairs, and I went to bed. And, A, that's really pathetic. Like, the fact that I just think this team is going to lose to the Lakers.
Yeah.
And but then when I woke up this morning, I thought about that game, and it made me so angry, which is why we're having this podcast. I was just like, it's like, usually I have the opposite reaction. Like, I'll be really frustrated from a game, and I'll purposely avoid Twitter so I don't say, like, horrible things about refs or horrible things about individual players on the team. And then, you know, the next day I'm like, oh, I'm okay, and I can be, like, balanced in my takes on things again. But it's the exact opposite. Like, today I'm just, like, mad. I cannot believe how badly coached and how poorly our team played. So I have two things. So I want to get your take. When Alvin Gentry gets in front of the media after a game like that, which is clearly a disaster, and clearly, you know, he's not happy, and he says the effort wasn't there. Is that code for anything to you? Does it mean that he just really thinks that the only reason why he lost was because his guys went out there and they played at 80% of their energy level rather than 100% of their energy level? Or is there like a deeper thing going on there?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of those buzzwords that coaches love throwing out there, like, we didn't give it our all tonight and stuff like that. I think he's put in that awkward position where he's, like, pissed, but he can't say what he wants to say. He can't be like, well, Tyreek's an idiot for pulling up from three with 20 seconds left on the clock, and Drew let Lou Williams, you know, beat him to the rack after being super aggressive on him 40 feet away from the basket. Like, why are you guarding him 40 feet away?
Half court.
Yeah.
Half court. Why?
It's just, like, he can't, like, I mean, he can't go up and say, he can't. And so I think he can only...
Just falls back on energy.
Yeah, falls back on energy.
So I think every time he has a rant about energy, should we just, like, replace our guys played with no energy with no intelligence? Is that part, like, he can't say these guys played like idiots because then they'd feel insulted that he called them idiots?
Yeah.
Because That's really, like, I don't feel like a lot of the guys weren't playing with energy. Like, I didn't feel like they had an overwhelming amount of energy, but Drew was playing with energy. Norris Cole's playing with energy.
How do you quantify energy? I mean, like, sure, people could look at, like, rebounds or whatever and all that. I mean, you could be like, oh, yeah, we only forced 8 turnovers last night. But, like, I don't think you can quantify that as energy necessarily. Like, that's just such a arbitrary thing. Like, there's definitely more that he wants to say, though, but he can't.
Yeah. And the other thing I wonder, too, is he just so tired of Tyreek Evans trudging up the court?
Oh.
And then that's like... Last year, I would say the number one complaint that you saw from people who watched Pelicans games, from whether they were fans or just guys who turned in and watched them. Like, I remember Bill Simmons talking about this on one of his podcasts, like, was that Tyreek Evans trudges up the court at crunch time, surveys the scene, and makes a bad decision.
He's hardwired to do that.
Yes.
And I don't know if it's, like, years of Sacramento that you just can't beat out of him, but I don't know. It's just, that's just what he does. Maybe I should go back and see if he did that in college in Memphis, but I don't know why.
What
you're going to get.
And it's like, it's stunning because it's not like those Laker guys were getting back. I bet that if, let's say we took let's say we just took Alvin Gentry's Phoenix team with Steve Nash. I would bet that they had something, or they would have had something like 30 fast break points on this Lakers team. Like the three or four times the Pelicans did run the ball down their throats right off of a make or a miss, they couldn't defend that to save their lives. Like there was one where Jrue Holiday literally just ran down the middle of the court and put a layup in, and no one even like slowed the ball.
He had that little like 10-0 run after it was tied, like 71-71, and then someone hit a three on the Lakers, and then they went on a 10-0 run, and like all of those were like fast break points.
Yeah.
And then they stopped doing
that. And then they played the prevent offense, which is to call it.
That frustrates me to no end. And it's like, you know, Monty used to say, like, well, you got to get stops if you want to run. And but like, the Lakers shot 37%, under 37%. Like, I mean, you should have been running after every single miss. I mean, have you seen Roy Hibbert trying to run?
So they shot 37% from the field, 21% from three-point. But somehow they got 32 free throws against this team. So that's the other thing about this team that's just unbelievable. How do they foul this often?
So much.
Like, everybody reaches. Nobody. I mean,
that also stems back to like getting beat. Like you get beat, so like you reach out and you foul. So like play fundamental defense in the get go. Like that won't happen. But I don't know.
So what I've been saying for a really long time about this team is when Anthony Davis is healthy and playing, this crew is maybe a little bit better than 500, probably about a 500 team.
Yeah.
Do you believe that anymore? Or do you think that they're really actually are like a 30% winning percentage team, even with Anthony Davis around?
See, like, I can't just, like, look at last year and be like, that was a fluke. Like, we won 45 games. Despite all those injuries, like, let's say we were 100% healthy last year. Like, could it have been 50? Like, you know, we lost to the Sixers and the Knicks and a whole bunch of other terrible teams last year. And it makes you wonder, like, what it could have been. And this year, like, it's basically the same players. I mean, they beat the continuity drum all offseason. And yet we just are a terrible back. Like, they are not the same team. They aren't. And this version of this team is not a 500 basketball team, not with the way they're playing. I mean, I understand they're, like, last I checked, they were beating up on the Kings right now, but, like, they'll have those little flashes, and you're like, oh, yeah, I mean, like, here, this is the type of Gentry ball that we want to play. But it's like, well, they're kind of playing a terrible team at the moment, so I don't know.
I think I've fallen into the well of despond, the pit of despair.
Ugh. The festival of sadness, as Zach Lowe likes to call it.
Yeah, so I'm to the point where I'm starting to think I need to go spend some quality time with Draft Express.
I've been doing that a little bit.
Have you?
Yeah, it's mostly I've been looking at some of the top wing prospects and they look good, man. It's easy to get hyped up on these draft picks. You never know which one's going to pan out though.
Yeah. Yeah, the one thing I wonder, like, and this is just the reality, I think. I love Ryan Anderson, watching him play. I know the numbers behind the scenes. I still love Ryan Anderson. It's been the reality for a while. But if you take Eric Gordon or Ryan Anderson, or even in this case, Jrue Holiday, and trade them, I'm actually willing to bet that as long as you got back some sort of viable NBA player, they've been so bad in certain aspects of the game. It'll be like the Ewing theory kind of thing. Like, we traded important pieces, and we're just going to be better by default because we've gotten rid of tire fire pieces. Like when you're so bad at parts of the defense, it causes all the rest of the defense to be awful. And somehow we have a guy on our team in Anthony Davis who, if you look at his defensive metrics, they're awesome. Like, he defends 14.9
shots a game.
Yeah. Which is the sixth highest in the entire league.
Yeah.
And the expected field goal percentage for those shots is 45.7. And they shoot like 38.9 on those shots.
Yeah, 7.2% worse, I think. I was looking at those numbers today. And
his defensive RPM is around 3.8, which is really, really awesome. And you know, one of the, I think, is top 30 in the league defensively.
13th, I think.
Is he that high?
13th. Yeah, I looked at
and,
it.
And then you like look at that and you realize, and he's surrounded by garbage. Can you imagine if you put just like one wing defender on this team? Like, just trade Eric Gordon.
It's pretty incredible the difference between what he's doing and what the rest of the team is doing. I think either you or Jason brought it up on one of the previous podcasts. Like, the defensive rating when he's on the floor is like a 103 or a 104 or something like that.
Yep.
For like the 36 minutes he plays, and then somehow, you know, in the 12 or so minutes he doesn't play, like, the Pelicans managed to drag that way, way up to...
Right. They drag the entire team average to like a 107 or a 108.
Yeah,
in a quarter of the game.
And, you know, you gotta assume that even Oshik plays some of those minutes and without AD and stuff. Like, there's still, like, some positive out there, but...
Yeah.
It's mind-boggling. And then, you know, when I was looking at those numbers today, like, you're talking about how many shots he contests, and it's just like, yeah, he contests the sixth most shots in the league. Is he just trying to cover up for, like, everybody messing up? Like, is he trying to put out fires everywhere? Because a lot of times, you know, you hear criticisms like, oh, he isn't, like, often in position, like... protecting the rim and something like that, but it makes you wonder, well, is it because, like, he just doesn't trust his teammates to be in the right place, so he's trying to make up for their mistakes, you know?
Yeah, and like, a lot of people have been saying that after, you'll see him match up on the perimeter with somebody and they'll blow by him and score.
Yeah,
but he's also, you know, playing a lot of minutes per game, and, like, honestly, if you look in the league, what big man do you think is consistently going to shut down guards in this league on the perimeter, game in, game out? Like, no. Draymond Green and...
Yeah, who's 6'6", anyway. Like,
right. And like, you just can't pick real big men who would do that. And so Davis can look bad here or there, but just overall, he is actually a really good defensive player. And it's just, if we could... fit a couple other guys around him on the perimeter. It is. We are playing a combined between Gordon, Cole, and Jrue Holiday, something like 78 to 80 minutes per game of absolute worst possible perimeter defense so far this season.
Oh, man.
That you could put together, and you just can't do anything with that.
No, I wanted. We haven't really heard much from Darren Erman, and I just want to know what he's thinking about everything. And
actually, you don't have to have a question. Just focus for a little bit on the Pelicans bench when they're playing in front of them.
Yeah.
And I am willing to bet that he has gone through probably 7 or 8 clipboards by now.
Oh yeah,
he is. Swinging that thing around, he's stomping his feet. He's so bad all the time. Oh, he's furious.
So much fire in him, and just
yep.
God.
Oh,
maybe the reason we haven't heard from him is basically he has no voice by the end of the game, and
that's probably why
they're like, yeah, just you should probably rest that up. Like,
that or they're scared he won't say, my guys didn't play with enough energy.
It's probably that. You know what? Probably that.
So, anyways, I don't know if this podcast is going to make anybody feel better or happy. I wanted to get that's the benefit of having a podcast. I can rant, damn it.
Yeah, you know, get that weight off your chest.
So, I hope everybody else had a fun time listening to this and saying, Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Stupid Alvin Gentry. Don't trade it all, Del Demson. By the way, you're stupid, too.
Yeah, fire everybody. Bring back Monty.
Bring back Monty. Oh, it makes you wonder. It really does make you wonder. Like, is Monty actually a really good coach?
My whole thing with Monty was that he wasn't necessarily a bad coach. I just, you know, like, it was the common criticisms. Like, I didn't agree with him slowing down the pace. I didn't agree with him, you know, playing prevent offense at the end of it. Like, those were, like, my two major things. Like, he showed, you know, people like, oh, well, our defense sucked the whole time. And it's like, well, have we seen our players? I mean, when he had good defensive players to work with, they put out decent numbers. Like, the starting lineups that last year, like, the two main starting lineups that we had last year, both had defensive ratings under 100, which is really good. So, you know, he kind of showed that, like, when he has some of the talent to work with, he can get something done. But, and now, you know, it's beginning to look like he was onto something with slowing the pace down and, you know, making the offense simplified. I don't know.
Or it's just Tyreek's going to Tyreek.
Yeah. Reek's going to Reek.
Wow. That actually works on a lot of levels.
Yeah.
So is there anything else you wanted to complain about this team? It's like, did I miss anything?
No. I think we've gotten it all, and if we haven't, I'm sure we'll hear about it.
All right.
Yeah.
So what I'm secretly hoping is we're gonna publish this podcast, and the team is suddenly gonna rip off 15 straight.
Me too.
Definitely going to happen, right?
I think I had the winning numbers for the Powerball. Did you on that yet? Like, that happens too.
If that's true,
I'll buy the team. How about
you? Can,
that?
You're right. Yeah, that's what I was going to suggest. Like, you know, just make Benson a Godfather offer. You can have my Powerball ticket.
Yeah.
If you give me the Pelicans.
Oh man, yeah, no, that would, yeah, that'd be fun.
All right, so thanks for coming on and joining me for the podcast. I hope everybody enjoyed our rant fest, and we'll be back for a more hopefully normal one on Sunday when the Pelicans, I'm sure, will have won two games in a row just to
fight all of
us
and, you know, raise our hopes again.
That's right.
Nobody builds 5G like Verizon builds 5G, because we're the engineers who built the most reliable network in America. And the more you do with 5G, the more building it right matters. The more your network matters. The more Verizon engineers going the extra mile matters. It's us pushing us. It's Verizon versus Verizon. 5G built right from America's most reliable network. Most reliable based on rankings from RootMetrics second half 2020 U.S. report of 3 mobile networks. Results may vary. Award is not an endorsement.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.